Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved, and the host and founder of the show is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's jump right into the program. Here's Carol, in conversation with Elizabeth Partridge. She's the acclaimed author of more than a dozen books, as well as biographies of Dorothea Lange. She's also Dorothea Lange's goddaughter. She's going to talk about her book titled Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. It's published by Chronicle Books.
And I just, found the biographies that you wrote as an introduction to the book fascinating. One of the things that happened to Dorothea early in her life was that she contracted polio, and that caused her right leg to be weakened, and she went on to walk with a limp. So why in the world did she say polio was the best thing that happened to her?
Right. She was an amazing woman, and she knew that while it was also the worst thing that ever happened to her, it deepened her character tremendously. It gave her a huge sense of compassion for people who'd been struck down by adversity that was out of their control, which we see in her images over and over again. When she photographed the migrant mother, in 1936 with all the children clustered around her, and we can look at her face and we see that she's so worried. This is a woman who had a life that was going on that during the Great Depression was totally disrupted. So the polio gave her compassion. It caused her to be kind of an outsider, so that she was extremely observant. She was always watching people. She never felt quite like a part of any group.
And, I think the fact that she went and photographed people in difficult circumstances, the fact that she was disabled herself made it easier for her to work and to be with them.
Yes, absolutely. She said that when she walked up to people to photograph, they could immediately see that she had a limp. And so she said it put them on a different level with them than if she'd gone in what she called whole and secure. They understood immediately, looking at her, that she knew about hard times. So it was it took away some of the barriers that might have been there otherwise.
Now, the picture of the migrant mother, which is so so moving, and it's one of the most famous pictures that's ever been taken, it turned out that it had a good effect for some of the people that were suffering so much there, because it was published in the San Francisco News, and then the federal government actually did something.
Right. Dorothea was working for the Farm Security Administration, also called known as the FSA, and the point of her photographing, along with many other photographers, was to make images that the American public would see and understand that in different parts of the country, things were tough for other people, and for many people, and that they were tougher for this very marginalized group that Dorothea was photographing, both in, the Dust Bowl refugees that were pouring into California, and also all, she traveled extensively going through the South on these thousands of miles trips photographing people to see what kind of circumstances they were in. The photographs were also used for congressional reports, things like that, to try to get government action to help people.
And I'm sure you agree that her purpose was to show the migrants and people that were having so much trouble during the Depression, although they had been struck down and were in dire need, they weren't broken. And instead, she wanted to portray the courage and the strength they had to keep going, and the way they were able to build ingenious shelters of cardboard. It all very touching and moving, and shows how Americans can be such valiant and are such valiant people.
Yes, one of the ways she phrased that was to say, it's hard to photograph a proud man against a background like that. meaning when she was out in the camps and these guys who were totally destitute, how could she photograph, how could she get her photographs to show that they still personally had integrity and pride? And that was her goal. And I think she did it so beautifully. You know, she was a complex thinker and a complex visual thinker, so she encompassed just a tremendous amount in her images that, you know, it's very hard to do. There's very few people who are brilliant at it the way she was.
And I was also very taken, because I didn't know that she had done this, with the next series of photographs that she had done after she finished working for the Farm Security Administration. She went on to photograph, during the beginning of World War II, the Japanese that were sent to live in isolated camps. And do you think that most Americans knew what was happening to America's Japanese citizens? And was she concerned, really, about the erosion of civil rights? Because I couldn't believe there's a picture in there that she took of Japanese children, citizens, having to wear ID cards.
Right, right. It was a publicly known program. There was nothing hidden about the fact that the government was taking the Japanese off the West Coast and putting them into these internment camps for the duration of the war. The reason the government asked her to photograph this, the War Relocation Authority, asked her to photograph because they wanted to show that this was a humane process. Well, Dorothea was absolutely appalled. The suspension of civil liberties for her was absolutely terrifying, that this was done on the basis of the blood running through your veins. So she was totally opposed to what the government was doing, but for her own reasons, she felt it was very, very important to document the whole process, though it was the opposite of what the government, their reasoning for it. Now, she was forbidden from certain things. She was not allowed to photograph the guard towers with men with guns in them. She wasn't allowed to photograph the barbed wire. But within the constraints of what they let her do, she managed to make such beautiful photographs that you really can see what the whole process was like. So it's a beautiful legacy. And the photos were impounded for quite a long time, but they are available now. And they're just totally worth looking at. They're just beautiful and very informative.
Right. And, you know, when you realize that they only had one suitcase to take to these new camps and you didn't know where they were going, yet they were very stoic and they acted like good citizens. And mm-hmm. We need to know that and all about what happened. And those pictures that are in the book that you're involved with, Dorothy Lang, Grab a Hunk of Lightning, they really, I think for the first time, let people know what that was all about.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's just a beautiful and very intense and touching set of photographs. If anyone wants to look at them, you can look online at the National Archives, which is a government site, and see quite a few of them.
Now, another thing that really grabbed me when I read your biography in the beginning of the book was that the words that Dorothea used in the reports, the field reports that she wrote, they come directly from the questions that she was asking the people that she photographed, and they do provide some insight into her heart and mind. And, you know, really, I was touched, and I had so many different emotions when she asked the subject what it was like to be a slave. And he said, when it's midnight and it's raining, and he says, go, you go. And mm-hmm. and what a quote. And, you know, it just makes you shiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She had an amazing ear and an amazing memory for what people said. And she would ask them very pointed questions. Dorothea was not somebody you messed around with. You know, when she asked you a question, you answered it. And she just would take what people said, and she loved writing down in their own words what they said. You know, she was just, she could just hone in on what was a really evocative little phrase that they might have said. And over again, she used that in her captioning to add content to the image she was taking.
And it certainly does. And she went on in her later years to photograph diverse groups of people from Asia as well as the Middle East. And the wonder in that type of photography that she did later on is that it shows what the human face really can reveal, and that all over the world we have the same expressions. They're readable and understandable. So
Yes. She just loved faces. She just, you know, she was so observant. She just loved watching all the emotions that could chase across a person's face. And in her early life, she'd been a portrait photographer. So she'd really trained herself to look at faces and see what information was there, to look at bodies, see what kind of information was being conveyed in someone's body. She said that you should be able to photograph someone from the back and let your viewer know as much about that person as if you took the photograph from the front.
Elizabeth Partridge, in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning, published by Chronicle Books. And you can learn more by going to elizabethpartridge.com. Carol Marks returns on A Touch of Gray in conversation with Lorraine Brodick. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our host, Carol Marks, in conversation with Lorraine Brodick. She's the author of A Nobody in a Somebody World, My Hollywood Life in Beverly Hills, published by Tate. She tells a heartwarming story about Margaret Hamilton and The Wizard of Oz.
Now, I want to ask you first about the unusual title for your memoir, A Nobody in a Somebody World, My Hollywood Life in Beverly Hills, and how your best friend, and you were so lucky to have her, Irma Bombeck, came up with the title when your trip to the bottom of the Grand Canyon turned into a terrifying, life-threatening situation. So briefly, what happened, and what did that lead Irma to mumble to you?
Well, even this day and age, I'm still laughing at that experience. And whenever my husband and I get together with the Bombecks, it always comes up. And I had the privilege, though sad, to give that story as her eulogy at her funeral when we lost her over a decade ago. But what happened was she had come up with this great idea for a vacation, quote-unquote, to run the river rapids down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon on the Colorado River. And we started hiking the Bright Angel Trail, which is a very steep trail, and smart people take mules to get down to the raft, but she wanted to hike. And Irma had polycystic kidney disease, and that's what eventually took her life. And as we were hiking, she slowed her pace. The kids, she had three kids, Matt, Andy, and Betsy, and Bill was her husband, but they took off way ahead of us, and we were left trailing behind. And long story short, she started limping because she claimed she had not cut her toenails, and the toenails were hitting at the front of her boot. And so now her feet were hurting, and all of a sudden, she collapsed forward. And within a matter of a minute, I too keeled over. And what it was heat stroke. So I said, Irma, we have got to get shade. But there was nothing around, no cactus. We were in pure sand. So we rolled under this rock. And she lay there panting and sick as a dog and said, I can see the headlines now. Famous humorous newspaper columnist and TV celebrity dies on trail with little unknown person. And that was me. So fortunately, we recovered. Mules came around the bend, and she rolled out flat on her back, looked up at the old geezer on the lead mule and said, halt, your money or your salt tablet? We want to ride now. So he let us board the mules and took us the rest of the way. But that started the idea for the title.
Absolutely. And now I'd like to go back to the time when you were living in Lower Hollywood before you moved to Upper Hollywood, known as Beverly Hills, and 80% of your schoolmates' parents worked in the movie business, and you got teased because your father's business was making coil springs for autos and trains, and that wasn't very glamorous, until some flexible springs and some tiny springs resulted in amazing change in your family's wealth and the end of your teasing. So what happened? I think it's a great story.
Well, you know, growing up in Beverly Hills, and even Nora Ephron, just a brilliant writer, humorist, wrote about the same situation where most of our classmates were celebrity stars' children. And that consumed most of my life. It was Abba Stare. It was not only Nora Ephron herself, Phoebe Ephron, but it was just tons of kids who had movie star parents. And one day, my father was very involved with the parent-teacher celebrity night, and one of the people came up to me and asked me, well, what does your father do? Because he was very handsome, and he looked like a movie star. And I said, well, he makes coil springs. And they wrinkled up their face, coil springs? What the heck is that? And I kindly reminded them that the pen they were holding probably had a little tiny spring in it, and that would be Paper Mate, and that would be a coil spring. Also, Slinkies were it was a hot toy in those days, and Slinky was so popular they needed additional manufacturers to manufacture the toy. My father did Slinkies. He did suspension springs for trains. He did springs for aircraft, cars. So that elevated me up a little bit on the celebrity scale.
I should say so. And then it enabled you to move to Upper Hollywood, Beverly Hills. And one of the stories that I just loved in your book happened when you were 7, and you had a Sunday school teacher named Margaret Meserve, and she took you in your class to see The Wizard of Oz, and boy, you cried. Your classmates were scared because there was an ugly, frightening green witch in the movie. And what did your Sunday school teacher tell you about this green wicked witch? That, gosh, that must have really been a tremendous surprise to you.
Oh, we couldn't believe it. And I believe Peter Ford was in that group. Peter Ford's father was Glenn Ford, and Eleanor Powell, the dancer. Now, this really dates me because these are famous older celeb actors, but here we were sitting in that audience watching that movie, and I was scared out of my wits and started crying, as you said, and she put her arm around me and said, Lorraine, look, I'm the witch. I'm playing the witch. I'm an actress, and I had not a clue that Margaret Meserve, a.k.a. Margaret Hamilton, played the witch in The Wizard of Oz, and we were fortunate enough to have her as our Sunday school teacher, and she was hilarious. She just had the best sense of humor. But that was my first initiation into what we would have called a horror movie.
A great story, and I was also amazed to learn, talking some more about Glenn Ford's and Eleanor Powell's son, that in Hollywood, a lot of the kids, when they were interested in sports or a lot of sports, they actually got to be taught by some of the top sport figures. So who did he have the luck to get taught by?
Oh, well, I mean, certainly. Now, Peter Ford wrote a terrific book as well, recounting some of his stories. And many of the top sports figures would become our teachers. Mae Sutton Bundy, who was one of the renowned tennis players, was my teacher for tennis. And so this was not unusual to have celeb teachers, whether it would be in the music field or acting field or sports field, to then they would teach on the side. And Alex Olmedo, who was a very famous tennis teacher at the Beverly Hills Hotel, was a very famous tennis player, and we hobnobbed with him. My partner was Ann Pierce, and she eventually married Alex Olmedo. So, in a way, it was a very small community, only the difference was very well-known community. So all the names, all the goings and comings were very well-known.
Lorraine Brodeck, in conversation with Carol Mark. She's the author of A Nobody in a Somebody World, My Hollywood Life in Beverly Hills. It's published by Tate Publishing. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. He's going to talk about education, and he's going to talk a little bit about the latest on those breaches of the Internet and the very personal data at Target stores. All that and more coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we've come to that point in the program where we're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who, during his day job, if you will, is the vice president and executive editor of the trade publication Talkers Magazine, which serves the talk radio industry. We take a little peek behind the curtain, see what's going on in the media. Kevin, this has been a week in which I'll bet you people have actually been talking about the weather, whether it's the east, the west, the midwest, the south, the north, more so than they normally do.
Yeah, it's been an unusual time in as much as the cold's affecting the east and there's a drought going on out west.
Mm-hmm. And these are very, very important things. You know, it's funny, when we do the tallies, the tabulations at Talkers Magazine to decide what the most talked about topics are, sometimes we miss the obvious. In terms of what people really talk about, I've done some research on this over the years, and you know what I find the two biggest topics that people talk about, maybe the three biggest topics that people talk about in terms of casual day-to-day conversation?
What?
Number one, the weather.
Oh, yeah.
The weather is the great, pardon the pun, icebreaker.
Yeah.
Number two, computers.
People are obsessed with talking about computers, software, websites, social media, their Facebook page, their Twitter.
Their mobile phone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It is unbelievable how computers and digital stuff has permeated the day-to-day parlance within our culture. And three, sports. It's amazing how obsessed the average American and American conversation, again, is about sports. Your reaction?
I know, absolutely. I think that sports has become a dominant conversation piece in this country, and it seems like it hit us all of a sudden, but it's been gradual over the last about 15, 20 years, and it's become just a very important part of American culture.
It's very funny. When you watch a sporting event, no matter what it is, if you see empty seats, it looks like something's wrong.
Yeah.
When I grew up during the golden age of sports, it was very common for the average game to have half a stadium, quarter of a stadium, half an arena, and it was only big-time stuff that filled it up. Now, getting a ticket to a sports event, even a meaningless game, so to speak, can cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars on the secondary market, and they're very difficult to get. Regardless, Kevin, nice to talk to you. And Kevin joins us every show at this point in the hour with a little insight from behind the scenes in the media. He's the vice president, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. You can visit him and it at talkers.com. A Touch of Grey continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who is going to interview Pam Godwin, Pam Godwin was a classroom teacher and literacy specialist in the New York City public school system, who's going to talk to Steve about her new book titled The 52 Weeks, Two Women and Their Quest to Get Unstuck, with stories and ideas to jumpstart your year of discovery. It's published by Skyhorse Publishing.
Why did you write this book? Who did you write it for?
Well, we really wrote it for us. You know, we were, as you say, Karen and myself are two women. We're close to 50. We're almost there. And we were just both, we went out one night and we had gone out, we're friends for a long time, and we were just feeling really restless and stuck and discussing this and complaining once again, and we finally said, this is crazy, we need to do something about this. So we actually started a project prior to the book, called The 52 Weeks, and we said we're gonna just try something new every week and blog about it. We really weren't quite sure what a blog was, but we felt that we needed to be accountable to each other and put it out there, and then there was really no turning back. So from that, you know, after this whole process and getting some feedback and people really relating to it and it resonating, the book came about through that. But the genesis of the project was really just the two of us going out and trying this project for 52 weeks.
You know, the book, it works on so many levels. On one level, it's really fun to read and see what you guys went through. On the other, there's really a lot of good advice here for people who do feel kind of stuck in that rut. Were you surprised at the response was so positive about so many people were feeling what you were feeling?
You know, surprised, no. Glad that it was resonating with other people. Yes, I saddened that so many people are feeling this way, but not so surprised, because we knew, you know, after speaking to so many people, we knew that this was a common theme and a common thread. You know, in the big picture, we're lucky women, and we have jobs and husbands and family and children and careers, but we were just sort of feeling very, you know, became stagnant and complacent. And if you don't keep growing and keep learning and keep doing, you falter. So it was a way for, you know, we heard that other people really, really were feeling this same way too. And this way we pulled in, you know, we were able to say, hey, well, let's put our stories out there. And then, as we always say, we're not the experts. If we're writing something, we need to pull in experts to help us and give advice and give people solid answers and ways to take some next steps to get you going again.
And that is something that was really helpful in the book, too, is you have a great roster of experts. Tell us about the projects, though. How'd you pick your projects?
So the night that Karen and I went out and said we were going to do this, we literally the next morning, you know, hit the ground running. It was actually very exciting, and we each made our own list, because, as we say, everyone's 52 list is different. So we had a Karen list, a Pam list, and then a list together. Some of the things we did alone and some of the things we did together. We always supported each other and were accountable to each other, but we didn't always work, you know, do the same things. We made almost like a mini bucket list, and then as we went through it, we did not, in full disclaimer, we did not put 52 things down initially, but we had about 20, 25, and then as we started to do things, more things would come up. You know, we tried certain things, we decided we didn't like that, we crossed that off and said we'll never try that again. Other opportunities arose from just trying one thing, and that's the beauty of this project, that it really does get you unstuck, because one little baby step really leads to another, and it opens the door to another opportunity and another opportunity. So as we went on, we added more, took away more, and, you know, got additional ideas.
What was the response of your spouses? Were they supportive to this, or they think you're crazy?
They were supportive. You know, we had to find the time to do this on our own, because, as we said, we were not in a situation to where we could take off a year and travel the world. It wasn't that type of a project. But they were very supportive, and I think that ultimately they both, at least for me, my husband saw that when I did do my 52s, as they would call them, and my family would say, oh, are you doing, is this something for that project again? it put me in such a better place always after it was done, even though I always felt so guilty and so worried, and that I was being selfish and taking an hour for myself. It gave me, you know, it gave me so much more confidence afterwards. It got me motivated and productive the rest of the day, and it energized me, which in turn helped my family and my life, and so it had all a good effect in the end on everyone.
And actually, when you talk about that was one of the things that I was most interested in the book that did seem to resonate with people, is the fact that it's manufacturing time, and you do start to feel selfish when you're taking time for yourself. But you talked about how you found the time, and like you said just now, you become a better person, and all of the relationships feel that as well. So what'd you discover about yourself? I know that's kind of a hackneyed question, but what'd you find out?
I found out that writing a book is very, very difficult.
No, that's what you got editors for.
That was eye-opening. I'm a school teacher by trade, so this was, talk about getting out of my comfort zone and doing something very, very different. You know, it just, the project really gave, for me, I can only speak for me and not for Karen, but it really gave me my confidence back. You know, I think women especially tend to get, at this stage and age, although the book really is for everyone, I think it does span all ages. It really, you tend to get, you know, just inertia takes over. And for me, even though I'm generally have a good life, it really gave me my confidence back. And it opened the door to a lot of new and very unexpected opportunities.
Yeah, it's fascinating and fun. I suppose then it was the teacher in you. There are some really good checklists and worksheets that were developed in the book. I mean, you present a roadmap for people to find their own way. Was that something that you particularly took an interest in doing?
You know, I think that probably the little worksheets and to-dos and the colors were maybe one of my little fun little pet projects. But Karen and I both felt very strongly that this wasn't just, you know, yes, our stories were in there, but we always joke that if it was just our stories, you know, our moms and our sisters and our best girlfriend would buy the book and nobody else. So there is, you know, you need to give practical information and practical advice for others so that they can follow suit. And so it was a conscious effort for us to really give ideas, because sometimes people do get paralyzed and they just need that one first item. So there are enormous amounts of lists in the back of the book that give you ideas to kind of jumpstart things yourself. There are worksheets so that you can actually, you know, follow through on your own 52 and keep track of it. We found that being accountable, writing things down was very, very, you know, positive and helpful in getting us going and following through. People often make resolutions and they bite off these big, huge things and then they go nowhere. And for us, writing down small little items and then giving the reader the ability to do that themselves with these worksheets and ideas we felt would be very, very helpful to readers and to others.
What was the most difficult project that you took on?
You know, it's in all honesty, the most, they really were, each project had its own set of positives and negatives. I really can't say that there was a most difficult. I found that even things that I didn't like had value in them, just for the sake of, you know, the act of doing it was valuable in itself. I would say that going on my polar bear plunge was probably difficult, because I did a New Year's Day Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, you crazy
swim,
person.
And it was freezing, and I don't love the water, and I don't love the cold. So from a very, you know, extrinsic standpoint, that one was difficult for me, because I really didn't think I'd follow through on it, but I did.
That's Pam Godwin in conversation with our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman, and her book is called The 52 Weeks, Two Women and Their Quest to Get Unstuck. stuck with stories and ideas to jumpstart your year of discovery, published by Skyhorse Publishing. Steve Wiseman conducted that interview, and Steve Wiseman is an expert on so many things, including fraud and scams. He's the webmaster of Scamicide.com, and he's going to come back in a moment and discuss the latest on the Target breach. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we are still in the company of our esteemed senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve's an attorney. He's an author. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. He has a website that is absolutely fantastic, certainly very helpful. It's called Scamicide.com. And now Steve is here to share his expertise on the latest on the Target breach. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, recently Target announced it had just become aware that the recent hacking that they had undergone went beyond the credit card and debit card data, including PINs, of 40 million of its customers, to also include names, mailing address, and phone numbers of up to 70 million of its customers. Now, this disclosure means that, unlike previously thought, the hacking wasn't limited to the hacking of the point-of-sale credit card processing devices found at the checkout stations, you know, where you put your credit card through, but far more extensive into the data systems of Target. It also opens up a new avenue of scams where Target customers, myself included, can expect to get contacted by scammers posing as Target representatives who are going to be seeking personal information, which they'll use to make that Target customer a victim of identity theft. Or you're going to get emails or text messages directly addressed to the customer by name, which prompts you to think that this is legitimate. They will also try and get you in these texts and emails to click on links or download attachments for further assistance. But if you do so, you're going to only succeed in downloading a keystroke logging malware program that can steal all of the information from your computer, and it'll lead to you becoming a victim of identity theft. This type of scam is called spear phishing. So what do you do? Well, first of all, you can never be sure when you receive a telephone call, email, or text message if that person communicating with you is who he or she represents himself to be. So don't ever click on links or download attachments in emails or text messages unless you're absolutely positive it's legitimate. Because in this case, as in others, the identity thief has your name so that it'll look like it's directed personally to you, but you can't trust that communication, even though it appears to be legitimate. In this case, as in others, if you think the communication is legitimate, check it out by calling or going to the website of the person or company purporting to send the communication. Add a phone number or website that you know is legit. That way you can find out whether that original communication was proper or not, and you're going to find out it wasn't. Same goes for telephone calls. You can't be sure who's calling you, so never give personal information over the phone to anyone whom you have not called. Instead, call them back at a number that you know is accurate. Remember, even paranoids have enemies. If you want more information about this, go to my website, scamicide.com.
Thank you, Steve. Very interesting indeed. And these are perilous times, no question about it, as we get deeper and deeper into the digital age. And it is so mysterious and confusing to the average person, I find, even to the experts. Try getting a straight answer about anything having to do with the Internet. Steve Wiseman is a regular feature on our program. He has written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And he, of course, is the webmaster of Scamicide.com. Check it out. It's very valuable. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line. She pulls it all together. Thank you, of course, to Kevin Casey and to Steve Wiseman and the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. And a salute and a thanks to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Without her, none of this would be happening. I'm Michael Harrison in the Anchor Chair, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.